Rainey. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
The time is 7:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, we have more talk radio.
Hiring for a membership director, a morning news and public affairs director, and an evening news and public affairs director. The deadline to apply for these three full-time positions has been extended to July 18th by 11:59 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information on these positions and how to apply, just go to kboo.fm/employment today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of People of the Drum on Saturday, July 13th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Gateway Discovery Park in Portland. People in the Drum is a concert celebrating the universal voice of the drum from the Native, Mexican, African, and Japanese cultures. Performers include the Painted Sky North Star Dancers, Metsukiya Yaoi, the Alex Addy Drummers, and Portland Taiko. There will also be drumming workshops for youth and more. That's the People of the Drum on Saturday, July 13th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Gateway Discovery Park, 10520 Northeast Halsey Street in Portland. More information can be found at kaboo.fm on the right side of home page under community events.
Good morning. You are continuing to listen to KBOO 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and you are you. Our phone numbers here to are 503-231-8187. And today, as we are broadcasting, is July 8th, and it is approximately 8 a.m. And good morning to you all. I want to thank all of you for joining in and being a part of this community. I also want to thank KBOO and all the volunteers who make this radio a possibility. Also want to celebrate and give thanks and for all those who participated in broadcast in the this weekend, the Blues Festival. You did a wonderful job, and I hope all of you are getting some rest. KBOO continued this past weekend. It's tradition of broadcasting the Waterfront Blues Festival, and that was an opportunity, a service to our wider community, and I want to thank all of those who made that possible. This morning, Celeste suggested that we continue our discussion that we hinted on last week, and that's about free speech and social media platform. We are all inundated and live in a world where we are influenced by social media platforms, whether from when we begin our day, throughout our day, and as we lay our heads to bed, we are influenced by social media. And as we hinted last week, a continuing issue is one of the ability for people to get their voices heard. How is it possible to have different voices heard? And one is who control the means by which we are able to speak and let that which we need to be said heard. The question is the role of social media platforms and whether or not more work needs to be done, maybe legislation even to to address the issues that have been raised by what many feel a limitation to free speech. Now, that's a term that is, I think we need to define it, because as the Supreme Court have wrestled this issue over the decades, what we all know is one person's free speech is another person's offensive speech, and what are the limits of speech? We certainly in this town have heard and witnessed the ongoing struggle around speech and the ability to speech in public spaces, and it raises the question of also of law enforcement. What is the role? When does speech cross the boundaries and become dangerous? And then, who controls what is heard and what is said? Those are things that we would like to begin having a discussion this morning. And we will welcome your thoughts. Are there limits to free speech, and who controls them? And also, as it relates to social media, I paused because the door opened and I heard a screech, and I didn't know what that was. So what are the limitations of social speech of speech, and what are the roles of platforms, whether it specifically social media platforms, and we can extend that conversation as well. But let me remind you of our phone numbers as you join in this conversation this morning. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning, Cecil. How are you doing?
I am well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I want to kind of add a little bit to our conversation. One of the challenges is that we're dealing with platforms that are international, that are global, and that various governmental organizations may either subsidize or minimally work with, maybe even outright partner with some of these platforms. And so you have an interesting wedding of a group of people who have the agency to implement and enforce rules, laws, mm-hmm. ordinances, whatever. And then you have a platform that's supposed to be about communication, sharing, news. So one of the challenges would be if there is censorship, as we call it, or if there are norms and rules and laws established to regulate the content of speech, as with the UN trying to regulate hate speech, because hate speech is popping up virulently all around the world. How do we not only characterize what is hate speech in a helpful manner, but how do we avoid what is the inevitable slippery slope?
So before you go too far, you mm-hmm. slipped in the UN trying to control speech.
Yeah, that's an example.
What do you mean by that, and what is that? How is it trying to control speech?
Well, if you...
And which agency of the UN? You just threw that out.
Yeah, I did just throw that out. Let me go back here to my little platform here. I'm going to have to turn down the noise so it doesn't make too much. It doesn't make too much noise. Now, while I'm looking for that, we do have a caller, and he might want to engage with us while we're doing this. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metropolitan area, 91.9 in points east to Hood River and beyond, 104.3 in points south along the Willamette River Valley, and of course, KBOO.FM. We, as Cecil said, welcome your calls as we talk about the social media platforms versus censorship and how we determine what's hate speech and how that's a slippery slope and all of that. Okay.
And it's less a slippery slope. I didn't say it is.
Well, the reason I say it's a slippery slope is nobody's going to take down, well, no, I shouldn't say that. Will people take down the usual boosterism, you know, rah-rah U.S. or whomever videos? Will those be targeted? Probably not. But if you are saying something that's anti-establishment, might you be targeted? Possibly.
Well, targeted by whom? And
by the social media platforms themselves, because they are also the ones that, and by social media platforms, I'm talking about Facebook, I am talking about Google, I am talking about Twitter, for example. They are the ones that are instituting some new rules on what is considered hate speech.
So, I mean, it brings up a whole lot of questions, whether or not these are private corporations or not, whether or not they have...
They are private corporations, but...
Whether or not you can control... you have control over that which you have control over, what are the limits? That's the challenge.
Yeah,
in all things,
that's the challenge
again. And definition: what is hate speech? What do we mean by that? And what are
well, according to our according to the sources, anything that promotes one group, says that this group is superior in any way, shape, or form over another group of human beings.
And hate speech is...
And denigrates them.
Okay. You're just the term hate speech.
I know. It's an inflammatory. You want to unpack it so that you know you're not speaking in code and that you're speaking in clear English or clear language. And so hate speech could be... it could be a rant on Twitter against Muslim women wearing hijabs. It could be Trump on Twitter complaining about legislators who are not in his pocket, or maybe an athlete. It could be... it could be, for example, a call to arms for the Proud Boys to come to a city and march because some group that they do not like is having an event. We can unpack it a little bit more, but that basically is setting up the possibility that there may also be violence involved. Physical violence, too.
And speech is something that should be allowed in every circumstance.
Well, when I went to journalism school, there was...
At any time?
We do practice censorship because you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater, for example.
I always wondered, about that. I suppose you could say it. I mean, but there are consequences.
Expect consequences. Okay. Well, why should there be consequences? Don't we have freedom of speech? Well, and then people confuse the whole idea of freedom of speech in the First Amendment. It says the government shall not abridge. It doesn't say that a corporation shall not.
Or your mother.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, especially your mother. Anyway, this is More Talk Radio. The phone number is 503-231-8187. Where do you fall on this? We'll start with Steve. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. I appreciate this program. You mentioned shouting fire in a crowded theater.
Mm-hmm.
There's reference to that in the Supreme Court's decision
mm-hmm.
affirming free speech. And I'd also ask you and listeners to go to the ACLU's webpage. If you look up speech on campus, they mm-hmm. write a very strong essay saying, you know, the answer to wrong speech is more speech. It's not to censor. And it is a slippery slope. If you're going to start, limiting that expression, it can lead to unforeseen consequences. The other Supreme Court decision I think is interesting to consider is that conservative Supreme Court Justice Scalia wrote the opinion upholding the right to flag burning. So,
yes.
You know,
yes.
We the answer to wrong speech is more speech, not restricting it. If I start a corporation and I invite people to visit my social media pages and post, I have every right to limit the speech and promote whatever speech, you know, as the owner that I can. So it's a good discussion. But again, that ACLU essay, Speech on Campus, covers this as well as anyone I've heard. So I'd invite people to visit that and keep up the good work there at Cable. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, for beginning this conversation this morning about speech and outlining some of the issues that's involved when we just begin this subject, and referencing the article by ACLU on speech on campus. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. How do we as a society talk about speech, and specifically in terms of social media platforms? And I think among the issues you wanted to raise were in terms of corporate control of mm-hmm. speech and who decides, and being aware that although these are private corporations, should they be used similarly to utilities? Are there regulations? And how dependent are we on these platforms? Have they become too big to regulate? Just some of the issues that come to my mind. Let's hear what you have to say. And 503-231-8187. Are there limits to speech? And are there limits to social media? The control of these 21st corporate giants have over us.
Now, you asked earlier, and rightfully so, about who it was in the UN that was putting everybody on notice, so to speak, regarding hate speech. And back in June, the UN chief announced that they were launching a new
plan.
United Nations
you
chief.
Said chief of what?
Well, let me finish.
No, I'm sorry.
Good questions. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Good questions, but I'm trying to both read and answer your questions.
Okay.
So United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres had declared war on hate speech. This was actually written this way,
mm-hmm.
That we all need to do better at looking out for each other. It's hate speech has gained a foothold, but now it's on notice, launching the UN strategy and plan of action on hate speech. We will never stop confronting it. Okay, so this strategy is relatively new, but it's supposed to be rooted in the whole need and belief of human rights for all and barring any discrimination. Now, the UN Charter was drafted after the world had mm-hmm. seen genocide on, and the way the article phrases it, on an industrial scale. So that means not just in terms of the Jewish Holocaust, but various other episodes of genocide in parts of Africa and Asia. And so those, of course, are the extremes that the UN has in mind when it decides it wants to confront what it feels is a part of this, or a part of the dynamic of discrimination. Okay, so then you also add into that xenophobia, that, and you've seen lots of examples of that in France and Germany with attacks on immigrants, and Russia with attacks on immigrants. In Russia, you didn't hear it as much in the news, but there were lots of attacks on African immigrants. Okay, not to mention here in the United States. Not like we're excluded, you know. And so that is one of the reasons why they have, and they being the UN, has decided to broaden its confrontation of discrimination by looking at speech that typifies or exemplifies or identifies itself as contrary to another group, and any speech that would denigrate, dehumanize, devalue, focus attack on another group, and especially uplifting of itself. Is that a fair definition? Because
yes.
Okay.
That's a good working definition. I lifted up my eyes because the way you defined it raised the issue. So what's wrong with limiting that? What's wrong with?
Oh, I don't have a problem with stopping that. But here's the problem.
Yeah, what's the problem?
The problem is how we define it, how we implement it. What type of processes are going to go into the thought that will eventually determine that something is or isn't hate speech? And one of the challenges we have is that, and this is one of the reasons why this is such a broad issue and it bears talking a lot, is that we are in the midst of a societal decline by the very use of this same platform. This platform was supposed to pull us together as human beings so that we can share and communicate, you know, around the face of the world, yet at the same time, it's guilty of creating, I think, an empathy gap. You know,
okay,
so you're not, and so that makes it harder even to want to have the kind of conversations that Steve says we should have. Now, I'm all for it. I think the problem with hate speech is more speech. That even sounds cliched. You know, it needs to be unpacked. But I think that the problem with people speaking discriminately about folks is more conversations.
So I think. One of the issues I have with this conversation generally is mm-hmm. that when you talk about hate speech, those who oftentimes when I hear people rise up against you shouldn't limit speech
mm-hmm.
aren't those who are the recipients of hate speech of attacks. So those empowered feel they should have the right to do whatever they want. And opposite voices rise up, and those impacted negatively by violence, by the results of speech are left, destroyed,
vulnerable.
Vulnerable. So,
yes.
I think those are the voices we need to hear. Not necessarily the loudest voices, but those who are hurt or damaged by speech. So, and then people who lift up their voices and talk about, you know, speech should be speech, and that if you limit speech, you're trying to, and they often use the term as if it's something wrong, politically correct, which is, for me, it's a cold word when you say political correct for, you know, right wing, you don't want me to say some nasty right wing.
You don't want to hear anything against the status quo.
The status quo. And also, I think it's a question for many of us. It's not being politically correct, although I'm not sure what's wrong with that term, but given it, if you think that's wrong, but what about being polite and considerate? So that's what PC for me is, being polite and considerate. So, there should be limits to speech. We self-regulate ourselves. And so, again, moving on to social platform, if I have a platform and allowed you to use it, why can I not limit what you say?
Well, some people will say, and we do have callers, some people will say, who have issues with the fact that there is a plurality of views in this world. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily spiritual perspectives. I'm talking about political and social perspectives. If you are in certain parts of the country, I mean the world, certain countries in the world, if you wish to identify yourself a certain way and that person doesn't respect you by identifying you or agreeing with your acknowledged identity, that can be considered hate speech. And so that, I think, is why some people are afraid of it, because they feel that it limits their ability to freely speak. Now, I have some concrete examples. I just don't want to run off too long on this point since we have callers. But I am all for limiting hurtful speech. And I'm all for listening to the soft voices. But I do not have faith in us as a species to do this. And so to fall back on what Steve, our first caller, said, but from a different perspective, I think we need more speech before we even think about regulating speech, you know. So let's go to our next caller. Thank you for holding. Oop, missed him. Go to our next caller then.
Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. There's a very smart guy that runs a blog, and he just wrote a book about something. So let me tell you this idea, because I think it was one of the smartest ideas I've heard in like the last 10 years. He said that we used to live in little tribes and hunt and gather and stuff like that. And then around 10, 8,000 years ago, the cities got invented in agriculture, and we started congregating in large groups. And immediately, all sorts of diseases that weren't serious when we were in little groups wandering around all over the place became very serious, because so many people were packed together in one place, and they had to work out things like appropriate sanitation for a city and how to avoid plagues and stuff like that. And it took, you know, maybe until the beginning of the 1900s till they got all of that worked out so that the water would be clean and people could live in cities safely and not suffer things like
that. Well, I would debate that date. There are ancient cities in Africa and the Middle East and the Far East that existed, and they solved these problems. So to say that we didn't solve them until the 1900s is disingenuous. You're talking about Jordan Peterson.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
I'm not talking about Jordan Peterson.
Oh, who are you talking about? Who?
Glenn Reynolds.
Oh, okay. This is somebody new. I want to talk about them. Okay, so
That was only the first half of that was the context of the thought. That wasn't even the thought.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, and if some different people got the knack of living safely in a city thousands of years ago, that's fine, and it doesn't really change the idea, okay? And I'm not trying to claim something about 1900. I was just trying to set the context, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the context. The thought this guy had that just blew me away when he said it was, now we have the internet, and we've only had the internet in a mass way since about 1995 or so, mm-hmm. okay? And we've only had social media since 2007 or so. And now we have all these minds packed together tightly in a way they never were before. And they're like the mental equivalent of diseases propagating quickly and widely in a way they never could before. And we basically have the same problem that the people had who invented cities. We have these mental plagues and diseases propagating all over the place, and we don't know what to do about them any more than ancient people knew what to do about cholera.
Okay, so I'm losing you, so tighten up and help me get to the point that you're making.
That things like memes and, you know, horrible ideas and horrible ways of behaving, things like Twitter mobs, they're analogous to things like the Black Plague that happened physically, because we got our bodies together into cities, and the mass of people in one place enabled diseases to propagate in a way that they couldn't before. Now we have minds packed together in the internet,
okay,
and social media, and they're letting mental diseases propagate in a way they never could before.
Okay, so I mean, I hear that, and that's not a new thought. So
no?
What is no, not really. I mean, it's
well,
been
it was
said
you
that.
And me.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, you know, human beings tend to replicate their environment, whatever type of platform they're on. So, you know, you look at how quote-unquote uninhabited areas have been colonized, and the same ills that we suffered in the original area falls right down to the colony. So, I mean, we take ourselves everywhere we go. So I'm not surprised that we have all these problems on the internet. And I mean, if you look at the dark net, its sole purpose is to cater to what some people might call the diseased or criminal mindset or infected mindset.
It's not even that it's criminal so much. It's just that, like, email is fundamentally different from paper mail just because how quick it is.
Well, yeah.
And you get these things called email flames that didn't really exist before.
Right.
And now you have Twitter mobs
doing
horrible things to sort of random victims, and that didn't happen before. It's a new place for bad behavior and bad thoughts and, you know, acting out to happen that didn't happen before.
I think I caught on to a point that you're making in terms of explaining, certainly since, you know, the last 25 years or so in terms of how we get information and share information, it has changed. And therefore, it also means that certain challenges come up that we did not experience before 1995 or so, and certainly with the rise of the internet and social media platforms. So it brings up new maybe not new issues, but new ways in which we
experience old issues
and ways in which we deal with that. So I appreciate you raising that and lifting it up to our attention.
Let me give you just one more thought about that.
Yes.
So they had cities in like 1800 in Europe, and they had diseases going around, and they thought about it, and they tried to do stuff about it, and they thought there were things called humors that floated around in the atmosphere that caused it. And they didn't really have a good handle on things till they figured out that it was really bacteria and viruses and, you know, vermin-like rats, okay? So people had theories about stuff. So now we have, you know, this big idea about, well, there's a thing called hate speech, and we should maybe prohibit it, but maybe we shouldn't. And we may not be any more precise about what we need to do with the internet to make it a healthy place than the people did before they knew about bacteria.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's a good thought. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I had to say.
Hey,
appreciate your call.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO with Celeste, and I am Cecil, reminding you that following our program at 9 is the Old Mo Variety Hour. At 10 is Locus Focus, and Barbara Bernstein talks with Peter Cornelison with Friends of the Gorge about a bill that aims to better prepare Oregon to respond to oil spills. From
we try
high-hazard trains that carry millions of gallons of crude oil through the state.
Shall I tease you and say millions of galleons?
Galleons.
Because those are ships.
Okay. Yeah, carry millions. Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's appropriate.
And 11 is First Voices Radio, which focuses on global topics and issues of critical importance to the preservation and protection of Mother Earth. Presented in the voices from the perspective of the original people of the world. And don't forget, you can hear all of these programs after that air on KBOO.fm or on multiple platforms, iTunes and Google Play. Thank you for being a member. If you're not a member, go to KBOO.fm and click on Donate.
Okay. You want to get off the hook? Mike is back.
Let's go to our caller. And Mike has...
No, he's not. Okay. Sorry, Mike.
Sorry, it took too long.
Well, but, you know, there gets to be a cue sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the problems with this is framing it for a one-hour talk show when there are so many things that... so many details that affect the whole concept of whether or not we get to speak as we see fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that one of the challenges with what is called hate speech is being able to see a person face to face and find out why it is they have an issue with you and having a discussion.
So I think I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. That seems like a good place, but it occurred to me, that might have been a vague definition. So that's why I was looking like that. No. In other words, if you say you're better than me because you're male, mm-hmm. you know, and younger, I feel that in the vein of thinking that more speech helps, I would then go to you and say, well, why do you think you're better than me because you're younger and you're male? And one of the challenges, I think, is that what we call hate speech is not necessarily looking for a dialogue.
So I thought I heard earlier you raised the point of the challenge of communicating through electronic media.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think an earlier caller, the caller just last mentioned mm-hmm. also in terms of similar type of issues. and the limitations by that.
Mm-hmm.
So it raises a lot of point, not only in terms of speech, but going back to the original, in terms of the social platform, the platform mm-hmm. where the speech takes place, who controls it, and who gets to say what is said, and a question which is not directly related to the influence of social media, but in terms of how we use it, in
right.
terms of the way we communicate or do not communicate, not being able to give space for to hear the response of the other person, so quick to click the button because I just have to say it right now at 3 a.m. and this is something that everyone needs to hear, and I don't even have time to correct my spelling.
Yeah, so, you know, if we want to have a conversation about this, maybe what we want to do is to slice it both horizontally and vertically. And by horizontally, I'm thinking of, for example, looking at how people talk to each other and what is the purpose of hate speech. Because hate speech, in a sense, is not the same as having a rant about people because you don't like them and you don't know them, or you just don't like them. Mm-hmm. You don't know them. It's not the same. You may be calling a person names or calling a person derogatory names because you don't know them, and you can come to know them and change. You also might be calling a person derogatory names, but you're not inciting physical or mental or emotional violence against mm-hmm. them. You're just telling them how you don't like them. So in that sense, the remedy could be more speech. This person gets to know you. This person gets to talk to you. Okay, now,
And let me ask you,
uh-huh.
in terms of hate speech, you know, just, you know, I don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the threat of violence come in? Or does it necessarily play a role? Or is that
in hate speech?
In speech generally, is that where you cut it off, or something like when it raises to the possibility of violence or attack?
That's a good question, because that's when you have to look at the psychological damage. I mean, sticks uh-huh. and stones,
right.
you know, may break my bones, but words really do hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at how the speech is used, which means you have to have some type of analytical process, you know, to put that speech and that experience through. But here's where we get on to what I think is a slippery slope. I think both Australia and Canada have either laws or pending legislature that says that you have to address a person by the gender pronouns that they choose. Now, some people have railed against that and said that I don't want to be told who to call somebody. You know, which to me is disingenuous, because you tell people who you want to be called all the time, or how you want to be called all the time.
Not all about you.
Yeah, but then people fear that, well, what if I call a person out of their stated and acknowledged gender by accident, and I don't intend to hurt, but this person perceives it as a hurt or a slight. You know, do I still suffer? What are the consequences? And so this is one of the instances where I want to see how carefully the UN looks at crafting anything, because we have to have space to speak and discuss. If we have space to speak and discuss, yeah, it works. And I I agree with what, you know, people have said about more speech is the answer to quote-unquote hate speech. But I don't know. How do we want to divide this conversation?
We have a caller online.
Okay. 503. Is there something wrong with our lines? Are we really taking that long?
I think we might be taking longer. Okay. So give us a call back. We'll be more intentional about getting right to you.
Yes.
Our numbers are 503-231-8...
What are our numbers? I don't think we're in sync today.
Okay. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Oh, that is the correct number. Okay.
Yeah, that's the right number.
Okay.
No, I said we have to look up at the screen
at
so
the
we
screen.
Make sure that we see
I
when
know,
we have callers.
I just blanked with
I
the
know.
Phone number.
So
initially we began our conversation because it was larger in terms of social media platforms.
Social media platforms controlling speech.
Controlling speech. And
mm-hmm.
so that's one issue, whether
yes.
or not there's too much power, too much influence, mm-hmm. whether they should be controlled like you know, utilities, you know.
Or controlled regulated like a government.
Government.
Mm-hmm.
And then the larger, more philosophical question is the nature of speech. And you also raised the issue, you and the caller, right, to how we communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the limits that, the challenge that face in having real communication, is communication possible? And then the philosophical, there also the philosophical question about what do we mean by hate speech?
Mm-hmm.
And when is speech action, and when do words actually hurt?
Mm-hmm. And when do words incite action?
Action, yeah.
You know, because I think that's one of the important details when you're trying to determine if something is hate speech, and that would also go to how these social media platforms would determine what is hate speech. One of my challenges is that if Twitter wants to regulate attacks against people, wouldn't that shut down the president's account immediately?
No, it could, or,
mm-hmm.
or anyone.
Or is he a favorite person?
I don't know, but I mean that's an accusation. Let's go to Edie, who has some wisdom. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm thinking that the reason why people use hate speech is that they're scared of thinking differently and of being stretched to have empathy, compassion, and they see the world in terms of I'm right, you're wrong, and they don't want to think maybe I'm wrong if okay. they're right.
Okay, Edie, so, you're fading in and out, so if you're moving, stand still.
Can you hear me clearly or what?
Right now, yeah, but you fade in and out, and it sounds like you're moving on your cell. So,
I'm trying to stand still.
Okay.
I'm thinking that hate speech purpose is not to engage, I mean, different people have different reasons,
mm-hmm.
but those who are promoting those phrases and means do not want people to understand each other.
Right.
Do not want increased empathy, because with empathy, with caring curiosity comes empathy. With empathy comes feeling, when
mm-hmm.
they want people to feel dead and not hurt. And
right.
then they don't want us to be emboldened with the lies for ourselves and see how we're interconnected, that would make us challenge and rebel against and change the system and hierarchy. So hate speech is not about reaching out to understand someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I'm scared, I'm hurting, I'm afraid I'm going to hurt more, so I'm going to blame someone else and create a distance. And if you dare talk with me anything differently, you're telling me I'm wrong, which I cannot bear to endure right now.
So how is it possible to have a conversation
yes,
with such
a
person?
Wonderful,
there's some wonderful books and stories of black preachers that say, hey, let's do a debate, and it was compassionate and empathetic and patient and gentle and gracious, and moved this big grand dragon or whatever over Ku Klux Klan to his side. They became best friends, and there was a wonderful jazz musician, a black man, who was with some whites who loved his music, and they had never talked with or sat down or eaten with a black in their lives, and they had grown up in the South, and yet they loved his music so much and wanted to be seen with him or whatever it is, and he said, well, why do you hate me if you don't even know me? And that question ate at them, and they started having conversations, and mailed him their Ku Klux Klan robe, and he kept having these conversations with folks and got a collection of over 100 Ku Klux Klan robes of people saying, thank you for your compassion and empathy. And there's someone here in town, Randy Blazak, who grew up in what could have been another white supremacist, you know, hate gang, and he's been trying to counter that. And there's Jeremy, who you met with
Edie, we're having real difficulty hearing you. You're fading in and out. So I'm going to thank you for the points you've raised. And hopefully when you call back, we will have a clearer connection so we can have a more fruitful conversation.
Thank you. Bye.
But thank you for your points. You know, to the point she made, yes, there is the possibility of transformation, but the transformation, it happens with one or two people at a time, you know, small groups of people, and it is very hard, but not impossible, when you have to sway an entire government or a large, powerful group of people. It's not impossible, because even though there are still remnants of apartheid, South Africa has shaken that off. Now, when it comes to advocating for genocide, it's hard to shake that off sometimes because it's fueled a lot of times by political ideas, a spiritual based practice, as well as economic issues. Mm-hmm. And if we want to distill that down to the points that Edie was bringing up, we would say, okay, fear of competition for resources, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe then, you know, there's a possibility for more talk to help. I'm all about believing that getting to know a person transforms the dynamic. But do the social media platforms really allow that level of connection? And then on top of that, if you have the ownership of the social media platform actually looking to control how you think, what are the chances of having a free and open and fair discussion arena? Because they use psychology in our minds against us, in terms of delayed gratification, in terms of making us focus on their product, and in terms of channeling how we use it, the product, their media platform, subtly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So a question that comes to my mind is, one, what's new? I mean, in terms of controlling, influencing, you know, your desires. I mean, advertisers have been very good at this for many years in mm-hmm. terms of getting us to buy that
goo-gow, whatever
that goo-gow, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's different about social media platform with all the thingamajiggy to control how I look at things? And
well, that's a good question. My first answer would be the fact that this is supposed to be a commons of sort. It's supposed to be a communication arena of sorts,
okay,
where we share information and our ideas and our humanity with each other.
So what's different about this than the old-fashioned newspaper?
Well,
and when you have the In the olden days, where you had
you
almost
had to write
like
an article.
Well, you had political party, mm-hmm. a newspaper. You knew its perspective. So
yes.
It was a Republican newspaper,
right.
Or Democratic newspaper,
right. or independent.
And,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I know
that's a good question. Mm. You know, that takes more than a few minutes of thoughts. Because first thing my mind did is it went back to the four theories of the press again, mm-hmm. where you think about how the media is used and controlled or is a partner to a government.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some type of philosophy. This is a very dense issue, which I think the more we talk about it, the clearer we get on how we want to define terms, how we want to define usage, how we want to define rights,
yes.
of usage. And I think more conversation is necessary.
Well, if more conversation is necessary,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have much time this morning, this is a conversation that will continue as we
well
try
next
to
week
explore.
We have a guest.
I know, but I mean,
yeah,
ongoing conversation.
Yeah, this is an ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is, because it's the day-to-day honing of our skill at empathy and being human with each other.
It's interesting in terms of day-to-day skills of being human and empathetic towards
mm-hmm.
one another, and how things are different, but they remain the same somehow. so it's a constant question, you know, for all of humanity in all time. But
mm-hmm.
certain things, you know, in the early 21st century industrial West, we have certain issues. We have to confront it differently, but you know, it's all part of what it means to be human and how it means to live in community.
Well, in community, we must remember that the human being is what gives community its context,
mm-hmm.
and so we need to render each other as human through our own humanity. There we go.
Okay, so
Coming up. All right. At 9:00, the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10:00, Locus Focus. Barbara's going to talk with Peter Cornelison with Friends of the Gorge about oil spills from high hazard trains. First Voices Radio is at 11:00, focusing on global topics and issues of importance. Preservation and protection of Mother Earth is the target. Don't forget, all of these KBOO programs can be heard after they air on KBOO.FM or on the platforms iTunes or Google Play. These KBOO programs are made possible by those of you who support us financially, and we thank and love you. To become a member, go to KBOO.FM or use our mobile app and click on donate, or come to 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. We'll welcome you.
Be well.
Thank you. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Voices of a People's History celebrates diverse movement leaders by sharing their stories. Members of our community perform readings of notable speeches and essays from inspiring figures past and present, a radically empowering opportunity to hear the echoes of history in the present day. Again, that's Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Jobs with Justice Trivia Night on Saturday, July 20th at 7 p.m. at Cider Ride in Portland. Teams will answer trivia questions about labor and social justice history, politics, pop culture, and other topics. The winning team will receive a prize. The space is ADA accessible and translation, including ASL, provided upon request. Again, that's the Jobs with Justice Trivia Night on Saturday, July 20th at 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground.